Title of this sermon is Little Known History, Part 2, Four Families That Destroyed the South. If we all stand, we'll read Ezra, I'll read Ezra 10:2a. And Shechaniah, the son of Jehiel, one of the sons of Elam, answered and said unto Ezra, "We have trespassed against our God, and have taken strange," that's foreign wives, "of the people of the land." You may be seated. The scripture is given when Judah was taken captive and they began to come back to Jerusalem. And some of the people came back. They also were taking foreign wives, which is the reason they were put in captivity in the first place. If you read the book of Ezra, I don't see how in the world you can't believe it. Ezra tore his beard off, rent his clothes, was so distressed. Were things good in the good old days? Or were they hidden as it is today? Let's see. Aaron Schoberg was born on December 13, 1813. That's the date, but not the year, of Randon my wedding anniversary. Both of his parents were Jewish. There are even strong rumors that his real father was Karl Rothschild, but that could be either true or false. Nevertheless, Aaron was Jewish. And there's a picture of him. And there's also a map of where he was born. Right there in Germany, south of Frankfurt. Aaron's mother, Friederike Alsace Schoberg, died when he was 7 years old. Aaron was born in Alsace, Prussia. Aaron's father, Simon Schoberg, was a leading citizen of Alsace, serving as president of the local synagogue for many years. His paternal ancestors were Spanish, that's Sephardic Jews, who fled the Iberian Peninsula during the reign of Ferdinand and Isabella, 1492. Things keep coming back to the Spanish Inquisition. At a young age, his parents began calling him August instead of Aaron, which he used for the rest of his life. This is the Iberian Peninsula, surrounded by three parts water. It's Spain, Portugal, Andorra, and part of France, which makes up the Iberian Peninsula. After August's mother's death, he lived with his uncle and grandmother in Frankfurt, where he attended the Philanthropen, a school founded by Mayor Otto Rothschild, whose real name is Bauer. When he was 15, he was forced to withdraw from the special school after his father failed to pay tuition. His relatives prevailed upon the Rothschild family, who were relatives by his grandmother, to train him for business. While training as an apprentice, he was tutored in French, English, composition, and arithmetic. In 1832, his training was rewarded with an appointment as confidential clerk. 2 years later, he became secretary and traveling companion to one of the firm's partners, which led to his first trip outside Germany, to Paris, France, to Naples, and the Vatican City, which are in Italy. Upon immigrating to the United States in 1837, August Schoberg, which is German for beautiful mountain, changed his name to August Belmont, which is French for beautiful mountain. August Belmont became a successful American politician and horse breeder, which led to the naming of Belmont Park in New York in his honor. The Belmont Stakes, the third leg of the Triple Crown horse races, is the most popular, following the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness. And then you have the Belmont Stakes. Belmont was assigned to Havana, Cuba, from Europe, to manage the Rothschilds' branches. However, before traveling to Havana, Belmont first went to New York. He arrived during the Panic of 1837. Of course, you know why the Panic of 1837 happened. Let's see, the bank was 20 years and wasn't renewed. Oh, okay. And remained in New York instead of continuing to Havana to supervise the jeopardized Rothschild interest. August Belmont came to the United States and the diplomatic service became a representative of the Rothschilds, that's the European bankers, and founded the banking house August Belmont and Company. He made a vast fortune and kept a racing stable. His son, August Belmont Jr., bred 129 American Stakes winners, including his most famous foal, Man of War. And here's a picture of his mansion. It's in Babylon, New York. The Belmont Stakes debuted at Jerome Park Racetrack, owned by Belmont's friend, Leonard Jerome, who was the maternal grandfather of Winston Churchill. All these people are related. Belmont owned the Nursery Stud, which is a horse breeding farm near Babylon, New York on Long Island, which in 1885 was replaced by a stud farm of the same name near Lexington, Kentucky. It is very close to the Kentucky Horse Park in Lexington, Kentucky. Now, we visited the horse park. Lily did Special Olympics there, and we also went there a couple of times. There's the statue. We see the statue right there in the horse park. That's the statue of Man of War. And then there's also this sign here about Man of War. I'll read you what is on the sign. It says, quote, "The greatest racehorse and leading money winner of his day, winner of 20 of 21 starts with lifetime earnings of $249,465. Foaled March 29, 1917, at August Belmont's Nursery Stud a few miles away. Sold at auction for $5,000 to Samuel D. Riddle, his owner, throughout his racing career and later retirement. Big Red sired 62 stake winners. His net earnings over $3.5 million. War Admiral, Triple Crown winner, was the most famous of his offspring. Man of War died November 1, 1947. He lies buried beneath the statue by noted sculptor Herbert Haseltine. So Man of War is buried under his statue. As a young Jewish foreigner in New York, Belmont had few initial avenues for social advancement. The existing elite, composed of older English-Dutch Protestants, disapproved of his extravagant lifestyle and taste, while the established Jewish community in the city was largely Sephardic, and Belmont himself disfavored associations with the smaller, lower-class Ashkenazi community. They're both Jews. His social companions were largely young, rebellious men from well-to-do families. With these connections, he gradually began to introduce European cosmopolitan society to the United States. Belmont's early romantic and social life in the United States also drew controversy. In 1840, he unsuccessfully courted ballerina Fanny Ulsher during her sensational tour of the United States. Ulsher's known reputation for promiscuity and her illegitimate child drew disapproval. In 1841, he was publicly accused of an affair with a married woman, and responded by challenging the accuser to a duel, in which Belmont was shot in the hip. August eventually became the Democratic Party chairman. I guess if you have these scandals, you become a chairman. I don't know. Belmont also used his influence with European business and political leaders to support the Union cause in the Civil War. He tried to dissuade the Rothschilds and other French bankers from lending funds or credit for military purchases to the Confederacy, and meeting personally in London with the British Prime Minister, Lord Palmerston, and members of the European Emperor Napoleon III's French imperial government in Paris. He did not want them to lend any money to the Confederacy. On November 7, 1849, August Belmont married a woman who was the niece of John Slidell, Jr. Now, you remember Slidell. Their child was named after his father, August Belmont, Jr., who bred a pedigree Arabian stock on the sire's side to the most respected English stock on the dam's. Belmont, who was 65 years old, volunteered to serve in World War I. He was used by the U.S. Army to procure mules for the service. Mrs. Belmont, whose name is Elizabeth Hamilton Morgan, a descendant of Alexander Hamilton, and remember that for my next sermon, named the new foal my man of war in honor of her husband. As the war dragged on, Belmont cabled home for his wife to sell the 1917 string of yearlings, including man of war. My had been dropped. The rest is history. Judah Philip Benjamin. Judah Benjamin was born in the island of St. Croix in the Caribbean. His parents, Philip Benjamin and Rebecca de Mendes, were Sephardic Jews who had moved from London to this island in the Danish West Indies when it was occupied by Britain during the Punic Wars. Philip and Rebecca had been shopkeepers in London and immigrated to the West Indies in search of better opportunities. Rebecca's family had been prominent in Spain before being forced to leave under the expulsion edict of 1492. So another Jews left Spain. The same as some of Belmont's relatives. From the island of his birth, his family moved to Wilmington, then Fayetteville, North Carolina, then to Charleston, South Carolina. In Charleston, they were with the largest number of Jews in the country at that time. And the Freemasons, of course, they built a big thing there in Charleston, South Carolina. At the age of 14, Judah attended Yale College, but left without graduating, and there's rumors that he was gambling, so he got kicked out, and moved to New Orleans. Benjamin apprenticed at a law firm and began study for the bar, which was a complicated course of action because to become a lawyer in Louisiana, the state use of the Napoleonic Code required fluency in both English and French. To fulfill this requirement, Benjamin took a job teaching English to the daughter of a prominent Creole family, Natalie St. Martin, so that he could learn French. The tutoring sessions worked well and provided unintended benefits. For on February 12, 1833, the 21-year-old Benjamin and the 16-year-old Natalie were married. Judah purchased a sugarcane plantation in Belle Chasse, Louisiana, along with 140 slaves. As a condition of marriage, Benjamin agreed that the couple's children would be raised in the Catholic faith. That's the same thing that happened to my grandmother. That was when you married a Catholic, you had to do this. The same year, Benjamin was admitted into the Louisiana bar. Now, get the next sentence. He soon became a law partner with the influential Louisiana politician, prominent lawyer, and plantation owner, John Slidell. Now we're going to learn about John Slidell. And there's a big thing about him, and I'll read you what's on this thing here. Here's what the historical marker says. Quote, John Slidell rose to prominence as a Louisiana politician in the decades before the war between the states. A lawyer who began his career as a businessman, he moved to New Orleans in 1819. He was elected to the U.S. House of Representatives in 1841. As a state rights Democrat, he supported James K. Polk for the presidency in 1844 and assured him a Louisiana majority in the presidential election. Polk appointed Slidell commissioner to Mexico with instructions to settle the Texaco-Mexico boundary dispute and purchase New Mexico and California. They're having trouble with the boundary back then. Slidell was elected to the Senate in 1853 and cast his lots with other pro-Southern congressmen. For a brief time, he was considered the most powerful man in the United States Senate. In the 1860 campaign, Slidell supported Democratic presidential candidate John C. Breckinridge. He remained a moderate until Abraham Lincoln's election pushed the Southern states into succeeding, siding with the South. Slidell accepted a diplomatic appointment to represent the Confederacy in France. His arrival in Europe was delayed by the Trent Affair. Did you ever hear of the Trent Affair? When he and fellow James M. Mason removed from a British registered ship by a commander of a federal vessel in order to avoid a war with Britain, Lincoln had the two men released on January 1, 1862. Upon arriving in Europe, Slidell found the French sympathetic to the Confederate cause, but met with little success in securing extensive military aid or the Franco-Confederate Treaty of Alliance he sought. Slidell remained in France, lobbying throughout the war. Though he was never able to accomplish a Franco-Confederate liaison, Slidell, through his political abilities and bolstered by his marriage to a Louisiana Creole woman, arranged Confederate financing through private French interest, the D. Erlanger family. And I added, who was the son-in-law? Dismayed by the defeat of CSA, the Confederate States of America, in 1865, Slidell and his family stayed in Paris. He never sought pardon from the federal government for his Confederate service. He died in London, England, July 29, 1871. He is buried in the St. Roman tomb in Villejuif, France. In 1918, John Slidell's son-in-law, Baron Erlanger, who was a financier and large landowner in St. Timothy Parish, founded a city in Louisiana and named it Slidell. And there's Slidell. It's right here, right next to Mississippi. Now we're going to read about the D. Erlangers. The city of Erlanger, Kentucky, located a couple miles from here, you go on 7571, the next exit, 184, is Erlanger. Was named after the Parisian family of Baron Emil D. Erlanger, which helped finance the town's early development. They made the loan to Erlanger, Kentucky, to help build its depot for the trains to run to Chattanooga, Tennessee, from Cincinnati, Ohio. Also, the Erlanger family funded the only foreign loan to the Confederate States of America called the Erlanger Loan. Since the Erlanger's wife, Margaret Bathrault Slidell, was a Roman Catholic, he agreed to rear their four sons as Catholics. Catholics and Jews are all. He married her in 1864. She was the daughter of the influential American lawyer, businessman, and politician John Slidell. Slidell was the ambassador of the Confederate States of America at the court of Emperor Napoleon III. His wife, Maria Mathiel Dislundi, was from the influential Criolla family again, whose ancestors immigrated from Brest, France in the 17th century. After the resolution of the Trent Affair, the two diplomats set sail from England on January the 1st, 1862. From England, Slidell at once went to Paris, where in February 1862 he paid his first visit to the French Minister of Foreign Affairs. His mission to gain recognition of the Confederate States by France failed, as did his effort to negotiate a commercial agreement for France to get control of southern cotton if the blockade was broken. In both cases, France refused to move without the cooperation of England. He succeeded in negotiating a loan of $15 million to Mimiel, Erlanger & Company and securing the ship Stonewall for the Confederate government. In 1817, the D. Erlanger family left Paris during the Franco-Prussian War for London, England. Now, I made a few little charts. The Belmonts. And in blue are Jewish people. So you've got Simon Belmont married Frederick Elsia. And then their sons, Augustus Belmont Sr., married one of the Slidell girls. And they had August Belmont Jr. He married one of the Alexander Hamilton girls. I would suggest you need to study this charts and if you're interested, and reread what happened. The Slidells, John Slidell Sr. married his wife. One child was Jane Slidell, who married Commodore Matthew Galbraith Perry. Their child, Carolyn Belmont, married August Belmont Sr. And second son, John Slidell Jr., married Mathiel Dislundi. They had three children, Alfred Slidell, Marie Roseanne, and then Marguerite Mathiel married the Erlanger boy. The Erlangers, Ludwig and Henriette, they had first Baron Erlanger married this girl. And notice what it says. Raphael Erlanger, who was Jewish, converted from Judaism to Christianity for his wife's sake. And then Suzanne Erlanger married this guy. He was a Frankfurt merchant who became part of the bank. They're merchants. They're bankers. They own things. And then Frederick Emil Erlanger first married this one girl. She died. Then he married Margaret Mathiel Slidell. Margaret Mathiel Slidell was the daughter of John Slidell Jr. and his wife, Mathiel Dislundi Slidell. Her father served as an ambassador of the Confederate States of America to the court of the Emperor Napoleon III. Her sister married P.G.T. Burgerard, General of the Confederacy. She first met her husband in New Orleans during a trip he made to America. She grew up on the plantation Bella Point in La Paz, Louisiana, 25 miles west of New Orleans. She accompanied her parents to Paris, where she received a great deal of attention because of her exceptional beauty. Her husband helped to fund the construction of a French transatlantic telegraph cable in 1869, where his wife sent the first message. And then there's Judah Benjamin. Philip Benjamin married Rebecca Mendes. They produced Joseph Benjamin, who married Natalie St. Martin. Well, what do we have here? So far, we have the Schellenberg, also known as Belmont. The D. Erlangers and the Slidell families are all intertwined, as they were also linked to the House of Rothschild. And there is more. The most important person of the Confederate States of America, who wasn't even born an American, was Judah Benjamin. Baron Frederick Erlanger was married to John Slidell Jr.'s daughter. So John Slidell's son-in-law was a French-Jewish financier that funded the Confederacy, gouging the South with usurious interest rates and fees, too. In 1863, the Confederacy entered an agreement with the French banking house of Emil Erlanger and Company. Erlanger agreed to market $15 million worth of Confederate bonds backed by cotton. He could receive bonds at 77, that is $77 per $100 face value, and sell them in foreign markets at 90. In addition, he received a 5% commission for selling bonds. Now look at this thing. Confederate chieftains. Now, there's 11 of them there. Does anybody see Jefferson Davis?
Middle
yeah, bar. That's him. Anybody see John Slidell? Right to the left of Jefferson, your left of Jefferson Davis is John Slidell. Who's up at the top?
Judah
Benjamin's at the top. The bonds were attractive to speculators because they could be exchanged for cotton after the war at a price well below the current market value. The bonds fluctuated widely during the war, however, as Confederate military fortunes waxed and waned. The bonds became worthless when the South finally collapsed. But by that time, Erlanger had reaped enormous profits. He held no bonds by the time their value disintegrated, and all Erlanger had taken much of the sale, the South had received more than $6 million out of $15 million to aid in their war effort. Then there was John Slidell's niece, who was married to the Northern financier August Belmont Slowberg, another Rothschild agent. After the war between the states was over, Confederate Slidell would make his Unionist nephew-in-law, August Belmont, his political protege. They both were hooked up in this tangled North-South Rothschild knot. If the South was to have any chance of gaining independence, it will have to win early before the more industrialized and populated North could outlast them. The South didn't have any industry. The North had the industry. The First Battle War at Bull Run, Manassas, Virginia, was therefore critical. To make a long story short, the rebels forced a Union retreat that soon turns into a full rout. The Union capital, Washington, D.C., is just miles away and is essentially undefended. It is the South for the taking. The capture of the capital and other parts of the North would have delivered a huge psychological blow to the North because many Northerners aren't in favor of the war anyway. The capture of this capital city might very well have ended the war the same year. But instead of finishing the job, someone has decided to spare the Capitol, a decision that inflames the Southern press and leads to bitter finger-pointing. Who was guilty of stopping the South from an early victory? It was known that Jefferson Davis relied on his Jewish Attorney General, and former Louisiana Senator Judah Benjamin, who was referred to by critics as Davis's pet Jew. Benjamin held the titles of Secretary of War, Secretary of State, and Attorney General for the Confederacy. Such a delaying scenario would fit perfectly with a Rothschild plan to have a long war, one in which both sides could be indebted and weakened before the British and French could arrive. Confederate General Stonewall Jackson, B.G.T. Beauregard, and Henry Wise all hated Judah Benjamin. Was this enmity in their hearts? Alexander Hamilton and Judah Benjamin were similar in their actions. Both were Rothschild agents, and both were born British subjects as they were birthed in the Caribbean islands. What the banking agent Alexander Hamilton had been to George Washington, the same is true for Judah Benjamin and Jefferson Davis. There is simply no exaggerating the influence of Judah Benjamin. In 1862, Judah Benjamin, under intense congressional pressure, was forced to resign as war secretary. Jefferson Davis then appoints his beleaguered advisor as the South's Secretary of State. In this position, Benjamin will work with Slidell and Slidell's French-Jewish son-in-law, Erlanger, to secure not just financing the Rothschild syndicate, but also to induce the direct involvement of Rothschilds, Britain, and France into the war on the side of the South. A joint British and French entry into the war would have tipped the scales in favor of the South and ultimately led the two American nations both under foreign influence. Lincoln and the Secretary of State, William Stuart, blocked Judah Benjamin's scheme by turning to Russia for help. In a clear message to his old Rothschild-funded foes from the Crimea War, Tsar Alexander II stations the better part of the Pacific Fleet in San Francisco and a portion of his Western Fleet in New York. The British and French instigators of the Crimean War get the message and are forced to back off. Judah Benjamin and the Rothschild financiers are thus thwarted. You don't want to thwart the Jews. They always seek revenge, not forgiveness, revenge. Together, Alexander II and Lincoln have defiled the London bankers and will both pay a heavy price for it. After the war, in recognition of or payback for Russia's help in keeping Britain and France out of the war, Seward will arrange for the purchase of Alaska from Russia after the war. An act dismissed the time as Seward's folly, but now we know the reason for the folly. And two, Lincoln would be assassinated. My conclusion. The families of Slidell, Erlanger, Belmont, and Benjamin, three Sephardic Jews, and one Roman Catholic, are all connected with the banking firm of the Rothschilds. Catholics and Jews seem to be a permanent pattern in the control of our government. Judah Benjamin became the law partner with an influential Louisiana politician, prominent lawyer, and plantation owner, John Slidell. John Slidell was born in New York. He was also helped by Frederick Emily D. Erlanger, Slidell Jr.'s son-in-law, in financial situations. Slidell, through his political abilities and bolstered by his marriage to a Louisiana Creole woman, arranged Confederate financing through private French interests with his in-law, the D. Erlanger family. Now, I keep saying this Creole woman. Who in the world, what's a Creole woman? So I looked it up. Creole means native, or in the context of Louisiana history, native to Louisiana. In a narrower sense, however, it has historically referred to people of African, European, and or mixed African, European, and indigenous ancestry who are native to Louisiana. As such, the word Creole can refer to persons who are black, white, or multiracial, with Creole authenticity regarded by some as independent of skin color. Miscegenation. General P.G.T. Benegart married John Slidell Jr.'s wife's sister, Carolyn DeSande, a Creole. August Belmont married Slidell Jr.'s sister, Carolyn Slidell Perry, a Creole. Frederick Emily D. Erlanger married John Slidell Jr.'s daughter, Marguerite Matthide Slidell, a Creole. Judah Benjamin married Creole Natalie St. Martin. August Belmont Sr.'s son married Elizabeth Hamilton Morgan, a descendant of Alexander Hamilton. Frederick Emily L. D. Erlanger agreed with Slidell to provide the Confederacy with a $5 million loan. It gave the Confederacy badly needed funds. It was only $6 million what they got. August Belmont, a Prussian Jew, came to the United States in the diplomatic service, became a representative of the Rothschilds, the European bankers, founded the banking house August Belmont and Company. Belmont tried to dissuade the Rothschilds and other French bankers from lending funds or credit for military purposes to the Confederacy. Russia kept Britain and France out of the war, thwarting Rothschild banks for the enemies that they funded during the Crimea War. Rothschild paid Russia back by creating the sale of Alaskan territory to America and giving them the Communist Revolution, which almost destroyed their nation. Benjamin D. Erlanger and Belmont were agents of the Rothschilds. Both of their ancestors had left Spain during the Spanish Inquisition. Judah Benjamin made many decisions for the Confederacy, which were very damaging to it. As a result, General Stonewall Jackson, P.G.T. Beauregard, and Henry Wise all hated Judah Benjamin. Governor Brownlow of Tennessee attacked verbally Benjamin, calling him a Christ-killing Jew. You didn't read that in your American history book. Senator Slidell, his Jewish son-in-law, Erlanger, his Jewish northern nephew-in-law, Belmont, and Jewish fellow Senator Benjamin formed an interest north-south connection with direct links to the House of Rothschild. One big reason why the South lost the war was this four-family syndicate: Slidell, Belmont, Erlanger, and Benjamin. Two Jews who married into the Slidell family, and one Jew, Benjamin, who had financial relations with the other three. Slidell, Belmont, Erlanger, and Benjamin, three who were not born in the United States. Belmont was born in Germany. Erlanger was born in France. Benjamin was born in St. Croix. And these three are buried outside the United States. Slidell was buried in England, Erlanger in France, and Benjamin in England. They all had a significant role in the War of Northern Aggression. Three were Jewish. One had his family married with Jews. Sounds like someone else in the United States today. Our president-elect has at least one in his family who is married to a Jew. He has a daughter who has converted to Judaism and is married to an important Jew in a very influential Jewish family. His first two sons have been married and divorced and are all pro-Jewish. His first wife was born in Czechoslovakia, his second wife in America, his third wife was born in Novo Mesto, Slovenia, Yugoslavia. The Democratic candidate who lost is married to a Jew and his stepmother to his two children. Her husband cheated on his first wife by having sex with their nanny. The candidate slept with the mayor of San Francisco for 10 years while he was still married, and he was 30 years her elder. She is the daughter of a woman from India, and her father is an Irish Indian from Jamaica. She has held positions of the District Attorney of San Francisco, Attorney General of California, United States Senator and Vice President. She was born in Berkeley, California, and lived for over a dozen years until she went to college in Canada. Will the results be different? They say insanity is the practice of doing the same thing and expecting a different outcome. The Bible gives us a story when Israel was defeated by the Assyrians. All their territory and people were either captured, escaped, or killed, with only one city left. They were doomed. But God sent his death angel and killed 185 Syrians in one night, and Jerusalem was saved. Judah had another chance to do what God had instructed them to do, but they soon failed, and they were taken captive too. What will America do? They're given another chance. Will they change, or will they remain the same? Will they repent, and will they follow God's commandments? God's commandments, no usury. All our debts are forgiven every 7 years. We don't want that? Jeez. Ezra chapter 10, verse 2, and Sihara the son of Jael, one of the sons of Elam, answered and said to Ezra, "We have trespassed against our God and have taken strange wives of the people of the land. May God have mercy on our souls. To be continued, blessed be the Lord God of Israel."